Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the Prospect Interview, where we meet the brightest minds and talk about the ideas that matter in politics, arts and society. I'm Tom Clark, the editor of Prospect magazine. And this week, historian Emma London is going to join the podcast to talk about the history of motherhood and work. Now, Emma wrote a major essay for us in our July issue about the shifting role of motherhood in the age of feminism and why, despite all that progress that's been made, women still continue to do the lion's share of chores and the child rearing at home. What might it take to translate equality in theory into equality in reality? She joins our books editor, Samir Rahim, to discuss how initiatives in Sweden, which is where she's currently raising a child, have to teach those in the UK about equal parenting.
Emma, thanks for joining us on the Prospect Interview.
Thank you.
As most of us know, who does the housework and then who looks after the kids is both an intensely personal matter, negotiation between two people usually, but it's also something that has sort of wider societal impacts. And in the piece you wrote for us, very, very nice piece you wrote for us, you talk a little bit about how the burden still, even in 2020, is falling mainly on women. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
I think there's two parts to the story, and one of them is the kind of structural setup in which a lot of people, particularly in Britain, I mean, I now live in Sweden and things here are a bit different, as I'm sure we'll get into, but in Britain there's still a sort of a system set up where women tend to make less money, therefore their income means less for the household incomes, therefore women take more time off when they have children. And that sort of often means that you become the person in charge of the household, even in relationships where you haven't, where you've had a much more clear sort of equal share before. It's also, I think, just a part of motherhood that you actually have to take time off. When you've had a baby, it's impossible not to. And because you're the person who will then pick the baby up whenever the baby needs to be picked up throughout the night, the other person might be going to work and therefore needs to sleep. You sort of become an expert. And I think this is part of the thing that we become experts in things we practice a lot. And in early motherhood and early infancy, we practice a lot. And it's a lot of hands-on work. And that sets many of us onto paths that are perhaps not ideal or what we had expected. So that's a kind of systemic part of it. And the other part is the sort of expectation that women are better at this sort of things.
Yeah, it's an interesting point there. So, you know, the idea that motherhood in the law is given more priority, isn't it? In the sense that you get, in England, you get more time off. There's an expectation that the mother will have to look after the baby longer. There's the idea, you know, if she's breastfeeding, there's going to be more of a connection between the baby and the child. So the question is, you know, to what extent should the law be accommodating of that, as it were, inequality? Or should it be sort of trying to adjust things so that men become more sort of primary caregivers of children?
And I think that's where the Sweden and Britain have done very different things. So in Britain, it still felt like this is an individual choice that each parent or each set of parents make for themselves. And each set of parents should be allowed to make these decisions. And it just so happens that quite often it's the woman who kind of gets left behind in sort of workplace situations. Whereas in Sweden, there is an assumption that we will all become better, that society will improve if we're all given an opportunity. And that's one of the very few things we can actually do to enable women to fulfill their potential in the workplace, or to even have a kind of gender equal workforce, is to make sure that men stay at home, because someone has to stay at home when a baby is very young. There's no other choice, really. So here in Sweden, the idea is that you make it possible and you kind of encourage people to stay at home. Whereas in the UK, where I was a parent with young children myself, and I had to go on my parental leave in Britain, there's still the kind of traditional thinking of, well, it's a short period of time and then we catch up at the end. But that tends not to happen. So I think the legal, for me personally, a legal impetus to change is very helpful. And it seems to have created quite remarkable change in Sweden over the past 50 years, where it's now so common for fathers to take parental leave. I mean, it's more common for them to be on parental leave than for them not to do any. And that's long stretches of time, you know, like a minimum of 2 to 3 months.
Yeah, and that's really interesting, isn't it? And we talk a lot, you talk a lot in the piece about motherhood, but there's also a lot about sort of fathers and what they're changing roles. And looking at the sort of the Swedish example, how do you feel that, you know, fathers in general are reacting to this new world where, you know, they might be the person who goes to the baby group, they might be the person in primary sort of caregiver for the child. How's that dynamic playing out?
I think it's interesting because, I mean, gender stereotypes abound even in Scandinavia. So there are definitely things that some male parents choose not to do with their children. In the article I wrote for you, I mentioned this anecdote where a friend of mine sort of hadn't even thought of the fact that his wife took their baby to baby sensory, which is sort of music rhythm classes for very tiny children. It never occurred to him that that was for the sake of the baby. He just sort of thought it was socializing for mothers type of thing. And I think that still is sort of a very common feature. I think also I have friends who are actors who've therefore had quite a lot of time on their hands when their children have been young, and they've, you know, in London, and they found that they are the only male parent in a group of 25 parents who take their children to a specific class. So you can be feel quite shy and visible in many of those kind of parental situations where mothers just sort of, you know, if there's 25 mothers, you don't really stand out in the crowd. But I think for the next maybe 15 years in Britain, there has to be some sort of performative male parenting in order for the playing field to level. And there has to be some brave individuals who take their children to all of these very kind of women-coded environments for them to become less women-coded, maybe.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just speaking personally, the last few months, because of the lockdown, we've been working from home, and we've got a baby who's nearly 6 months old. And just being at home and being able to just help out more and be there, working at the same time, but just being present, it does change your relationship with the child. And I found it actually quite enjoyable in many ways, and you sort of get to bond with the child in a way that you wouldn't before if you were just coming home at work at 6 o'clock and seeing them for the hour when they're really in a very, very bad mood, rather than seeing them all through the day. So it can be a sort of good positive change for men as well, can't it?
No, definitely. And I feel like, so I have an uncle whose children were born in 1971 and 1973, and he was on parental leave. He's an electrician, so, you know, not a female-coded line of work at all. And that's in Sweden, whereas I have acquaintances and family members in Britain who have children born in like 2013 or something like that, who haven't taken parental leave. And they might not feel it, but I feel a sadness for them that they haven't gotten to experience having their children that close and being so much in charge of them, that like multiple generations of Swedish dads have gotten to. I think it's definitely bond developing at an early stage. And I think it definitely helps gender equality within a relationship that both parents are aware of the enormous slog and toil of parenting young children.
Yeah, and as you were saying earlier, you know, just taking someone out of the workplace for a year or two as they're looking after the child, it will inevitably affect somebody's career, won't it? But if you have a situation where both men and women are doing it, and it, then when you go back to work, it's just a normal thing for a man or woman to have been taking parental leave, and therefore that will hopefully change things as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and there's an assumption here that, you know, in Britain, you get hired as a woman in a particular age bracket with the sort of apprehension that you might go on parental leave. In Sweden, it's just sort of assumed that most people will at some point need to go on parental leave if they're within that age bracket. So that definitely makes a kind of cultural difference, that there's no, the apprehension doesn't really exist, not because of the gender at least. And I think it's also, I mean, it is an opportunity to get people into the workforce as well, but you take more people out of it, so you create vacancies for temporary positions to fill maternity leave, for example. But it is still clear here, as it is in Britain, that there's a very male bonus to parenting. Men do better in their careers, research shows, when they've become parents. They are perceived as being more stable in the workforce, and they're trustworthy and reliable in a way that non-parents aren't. And women who become parents are clearly seen as the opposite. They're unstable and unflexible, and don't have their priorities straight. So there's quite a lot of work to do on many different levels here to kind of shape the discussions around equal parenting in both the home and the workforce.
Yeah, going back to the home. So in the piece that you write about, you know, the well-known phenomenon of the middle-class parent who then hires a nanny or hires a house cleaner to clean the house or look after the kids, and mostly, in most situations, that person is a woman. So is the discussion that we're having about gender equality quite class inflected, isn't it? To what extent is it helping equality if a woman can go back to work, but then actually it's only reliant on the fact that they hire someone to look after their kids who's a woman?
Yeah, and I think that's very important as well to recognise that there's in the parental leave statistics in Sweden, is quite clear that it's the kind of more working class jobs where men take less parental leave. And I think that is mostly related to income. So again, the working classes have a greater reliance on a male wage, because working class jobs for men tend to be better paid than working class jobs for women. So there is definitely quite a big class element to these discussions. And I think there's often a very extreme lack of awareness of how this plays out among people who can't pay for cleaners. I've often, you know, throughout living in London, I lived on many estates where, you know, women did part-time work and had children, whereas you then move in middle-class circles where having part-time work and children, it would still be a completely different wage bracket for the part-time work. So I think that's something that also needs to be investigated and we need to be aware of. And the Sally Howard in her books talks about how liberal feminists open the servant's door into their houses. And I think it's very true that we need to be aware. If you are going to hire someone to look after your children or to clean your house because you're too busy, then you need to be aware of their life situation and make sure that they're able to cope in their life situations. And quite often, you know, these extremely underpaid jobs that we're all so desperately reliant on, you need to be valued much better and paid much better. I think that's something also that this corona spring has really shown us, the lack of a previous lack of understanding for how much work is actually happens in the home or happens in childcare situations in preschools or nurseries or in schools. I think a lot of parents are now very, very aware of just how much work other people around them put in for their lives to be manageable with young children.
Yes, of course. And the people doing that work, you know, presumably many of them have children themselves and have houses of their own to clean. So the question is, like, what happens to their houses? What happens to those children?
Who cleans my cleaner's house? Yeah, definitely.
It's interesting we're talking about how the virus has affected all this, because there have been sort of anecdotal reports about certainly in academia that, you know, fewer women pitching articles, having less time to do the kind of work that they need to do. So in a way, it's brought home how much work there is to be done, but it still seems like disproportionately falling on women as the people having to do that work.
Yes, and that seems very clear and also quite strange. I've noticed that sort of tendency on in my own sort of social group of people who I see mostly on Instagram during lockdown, but where it seems to be mum takes care of the schooling dad while dad is at work in the upstairs bedroom, and then, you know, mum doesn't really get to do her work at all, or she does it at night when everyone else is asleep. And I think it's quite interesting. I'm sure that there will be quite a lot of research into just what happened. But as you were saying, the fact that it's noticeable that women are pitching fewer articles, women are declining work this spring at a rate that doesn't normally happen because of childcare needs. I'm in a very different situation. I mean, I'm in Sweden, so there hasn't been a lockdown. My children have been to nursery as often as they've been well. I'm in southern Sweden, where there hasn't really been a pandemic either. It's sort of a bad flu year, but not worse than that. So we've been very sheltered. So it'd be interesting to do a comparative study of what has actually happened. Once we have a few more months between now and then, I think.
I mean, I've definitely found this last week. I asked, you know, the perfect person to review a particular book, and it's something that she really wanted to do. But she said that because she'd been furloughed because of childcare, because of the virus and childcare, it means she couldn't do any other reviewing or work. So, she really wanted to do it, but she said she literally just did not have the time to do it. So, and those practical decisions, noticeably, no male reviewer I've asked to review a book has said that to me.
No, that's interesting. Yeah, it is very fascinating, and I wonder how much that very early days, so the first 6 months of parenthood, where most of that work has to fall on the person who's given birth. In most circumstances, the very hands-on extreme parenting at the start, where you don't sleep and you need to know where everything is and you need to make sure that there's enough food in the house, because you're not going to be able to leave whenever you want, and it's going to take 3 hours to pack everything up. I wonder how much that kind of early backbone knowledge that you sort of get through just those relentless early parenting months, where in the UK you have the father at home for 2 weeks and then he goes off. I wonder how much that actually imprints a sort of memory in us that mean that women who have taken a longer parental leave actually are the first to step up. Because it can be quite difficult. I mean, I've noticed when my children were very young themselves, I kind of noticed that I was so tired that delegating would be more work than actually just doing whatever needed to be done. Like it's you're so tired, you don't really have the energy to have a conversation about what needs to move where in the house or which bit of laundry needs to be done. It's just easier to do it. And some of that might also be at play here, that to kind of, it's easier if I do it because then it gets done. Whereas maybe, like Sally Howard is noticing in her own book, maybe women just need to trust that it will be done, maybe not just the way she would have done it, but it will be done somehow. And most dads are capable of finding matching socks, if that's of any importance.
Well, we do our best. We do our best. These kind of debates are, you know, seem very modern, but actually in the other book that you were looking at, it shows that there is actually there's a very long history of working motherhood. And there's an anecdote about, you know, women in the late 19th century going down, working in pits and then leaving their kids with their mothers. And so the idea of women working is not really new at all, is it?
No, and, you know, look at any agricultural society through the history of humankind. Most of the work has been done by women. Women are the people who've been ploughing fields by hand. And if you look at sort of underdeveloped economies, still you will find a lot of women actually working very hard, but maybe in sectors that are deemed as informal. I mean, if you're growing stuff for your own consumption rather than selling, then that tends to be a woman's work. But it's still very hard work and it's very time consuming. And matters of childcare have always, I mean, it just logically, childcare must have always been shared, even if it's been on kind of informal lines. I did my PhD thesis partly about the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa. And one of the first things they do when they start organizing, various community groups start organizing, is that they have to start a creche because the kids have to go somewhere. And it's a fairly standard, most women are very happy to hand their kids over for a few hours. it's just part of, you know, it's a necessity. So the idea again then that childcare is bad and that it damages children is more of a 20th century invention than anything that's come before, because it's always been a necessity. Women have always been needed in the workforce, whether it's been informal or formal labour, and therefore their children have always needed to be looked after by someone.
Was that usually done in extended families when people used to live together rather than employing someone to...
Exactly. And then you have the kids those days, I have the kids the next day, your grandmother will take them, my grandmother will take them another week. I mean, the sort of patchwork of childcare rather than sending them to some institutional childcare like maybe a nursery or a preschool. But definitely that's not a new thing. Childcare is not new, and women at work is not a new phenomenon.
And isn't there a theory, I'm not sure how true it is, but that women live longer than men because of that effect, that they need to be around to help look after their children's children?
Yeah, no, that might be true. Quite possibly.
You talk about some 20th century inventions, and one of the most fascinating parts of your piece is when you talk about the invention of the housewife. Yeah. The idea that the woman is at home looking after everything, the household, is actually quite a historically specific point, isn't it? Tell us a bit more about that.
It comes when it's actually financially possible for someone to stay at home. So it's a class thing again. So many working class women have predominantly always needed to work. My own family history is such that my grandmothers worked. And that's not been unusual, but in the early 20th century, as particularly maybe after the Second World War, when the economy is in the West is kind of booming again, there is partly aspiration, partly respectability, and partly actually financially possible to create this kind of role and the ideal version of a woman as a housewife. really playing on all the mothering stereotypes. So this is someone who takes care of not just the children, but the home, the husband, community relationships and everything around it. And it becomes a very powerful image that very many women buy into in a very, very thorough fashion and aspire to become housewives. In housewives are also very important for the early welfare state because they do a lot of the work that the early welfare state can't do. So in Sweden, for example, there isn't any childcare, state-sanctioned childcare, really, until the late 60s. But so women are needed to kind of prop up the welfare state by doing childcare for free, basically. And as a result, they get lower pensions and and everything else that goes with it. These days, it's different. These days, the Swedish welfare state is very keen on childcare partly as a way of keeping women in employment, which means that they have a taxable income. You can't tax a housewife because she has no income. So, but it is the housewife is specific to a place and a time. And there are several kind of links into it. And I think respectability, the fact that this is an aspirational thing for the kind of upper working classes to be able to afford for the woman to stay at home, I think it's important to remember, and part of why it becomes such a powerful and influential period, because it was a very short, it's like a decade and a half, but it's something that we still wrestle with.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You mentioned in the piece that, you know, the era of the servant or the live-in servant was coming to an end because it was becoming unaffordable and social patterns were changing. So women who maybe previously hadn't taken on that kind of work and were starting to take it on. But it was also an era slightly before, you know, mod cons and technology. So, you know, with tens of, dishwashers and all the rest of it, and washing machines speeding up housework. So it is a sort of odd little period, isn't it? But it still exerts this great hold on the imagination, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting as well because housework is work. There's a lot of actual quite hard physical labor that takes place in a household to keep it running, and particularly before all of the mod cons come in. So just washing, which used to be done by washerwomen who maybe after the Second World War get factory jobs instead, which are better paid and more secure. But so someone has to do it, and it takes a lot of time and it's hard work. Someone has to bake the food and cook the food. There isn't a frozen section in a supermarket where you can kind of liberate yourself from having to meal plan. There's actual work. But what is interesting then is that when that period is coming to an end, when washing machines become more affordable, when Hoovers start appearing or vacuum cleaners start appearing, the idea is still for a woman to stay at home, even though clearly she could do the work much quicker than she could have done before. So, and that I think is when we move into the kind of ideal woman that we saw maybe even recreated in Mad Men a few years ago, the kind of very, very good looking, very groomed, perfect fingernails and lipstick kind of housewife, who might even have some help cleaning the house, but she still has to kind of perform this ideal womanhood. And then in the slightly better classes, the more affluent classes, it becomes, you know, it's kind of the trophy wife. The housewife morphs into a trophy of a wife the closer to our own time that we get. But that's maybe a completely different conversation.
Yeah. So just to finish up, you said what do you, things have changed a lot, haven't they? Just in terms of employment law in Britain, certainly. But what's the next step? You know, what's the thing that we could do in terms of policy suggestion, and then therefore leading to some sort of cultural change that will mean things will become easier for women in the future?
I really think that starting off with parental leave is a very good place. We have in the UK kind of equality on paper, but in order for there to actually be equality in practice, there needs to be some very fairly large structural changes around parental leave. I think we need to start talking about parenting rather than motherhood. And maybe there's a performative aspect to using kind of gender neutral nouns for it. But I think it's, you know, it's something that all individuals, regardless of their gender, should be able to do. And I think understanding that some of these law changes are actually needed in order for parenting in practice to become as equal and the workplace to become as equal as possible is needed. So quite drastic changes still, kind of changing laws don't tend to change cultures very well or very easily. I think there needs to be economic investments and a thorough investigation into just what makes a difference. And in, say, compare Sweden and Britain again, Sweden's parental leave is very generous, but it's paid for through social security, so it's not paid by an individual company. And that might be something that needs, we make greater social security contributions in Sweden, but we also get quite a lot of it back through having, you know, more generous parental leave, for example. So there ought to be, I'm not entirely sure which party in the UK would like to take this and run with this. The very early Labour government under Tony Blair is, you know, had great many changes and reforms that really enabled women in the workforce, but so many of them have been rolled back. So something needs to be happening. But a greater awareness of just structural problems, and that laws need to have some sort of practical element in them for the practice to actually change here.
Thank you so much, Emma. I can hear actually next door the baby's woken up, so I think I need to go and see if she needs some help. But thank you so much. That's been really great.
Thank you.
That's all from us. Thanks for joining us on this week's Prospect interview. If you enjoyed our podcast, please do leave us a rating and a review. Rebecca Lou's our producer. Goodbye, stay safe, and we'll see you next week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.